Salam dear listeners and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. By Swami's grace, as we discuss chapter 9 of Prema Vahini, today we have in the studios along with me, of course, Sai Prakash, the co-host of this program, and also the special guest for this session is Mr. Amit Sood. If you have been following this series right in the initial days of Vahini Satsang, probably the second episode of Vahini Satsang, we had Mr. Amit Sood in the studios. We were then discussing chapter 1 of Prema Vahini. Week by week, thanks to Swami's grace, somehow we have sailed along through the experiences and insights of so many distinguished elders and devotees and seekers. And little by little, by Bhagwan's grace, we've been trying to understand, assimilate, internalize the amazing, profound pearls of knowledge, wisdom that Bhagwan has himself written. And today, Bhagwan has blessed us, has willed that Mr. Amit Sood is back with us as we now discuss chapter 9. And the difference is, the last time when Mr. Amit Sood was here with us, he was aspiring to be a faculty, a member of the faculty of the Department of Management Studies. Perhaps that was just in the womb of time. He was just thinking what to do next in life, and after having had 25 years of corporate experience, especially in the area of marketing. And today he is here with us as a member of the Department of Management Studies. So he's very much a part of us. He's very much someone now who is actively engaged in the university, doing what he likes to do the most, interacting with youngsters and inspiring them. So with a lot of gratitude to Bhagwan for enabling this session and for having Mr. Amit Sood with us, enabling this beautiful meeting of minds for this satsang, we begin to discuss the segment 9.4 of chapter 9. So we will listen to that, and then we will welcome the thoughts of Mr. Amit Sood, and then we'll see where Bhagwan takes us in this discussion.
ఎంతో మంది సాధకులు సన్యాసులు కూడా ఇట్టి అహంకారములకు చోటిచ్చి సాధించిన సద్భావములను కూడా కోల్పోవుచుందురు. ఒట్టి పాండిత్య మూలమున ప్రయోజనము లేదు. పేరు ప్రతిష్టలు పొందవచ్చును. ఆత్మానందము లేని పేరు ప్రతిష్టలు పునాది లేని గోడలు. శాస్త్రములు, వేదములు, ఉపనిషత్తుల యొక్క తత్వములు జీవితమున ఆచరణలోనికి రావలెను. అట్లు ఆచరణలోనికి రాని ఎన్ని మాటలైనను ఎట్టి పాండిత్యమైనను ప్రయోజనముండదు. అట్టివి ఆచరణలోనికి వచ్చుటకు నాకు తెలియను అన్న అహంకారమును వదిలి అందులోని యథార్థ సారమును యోచించవలను.
Even many seekers and ascetics lose their spiritual merit once they harbor ego in them. Mere scholarship is of no use. You may acquire name and fame, but such name and fame without the bliss of the self is like a wall without foundation. The principles present in the scriptures, Vedas, and Upanishads needs to be practiced in life. Without putting them into action, any amount of scholarship and speeches are of no avail. To practice them in life, one needs to shed the ego feeling of I know and reflect on the real essence contained in the Vedas, Upanishads and the scriptures.
So many thoughts here in just perhaps four or five sentences. So Mr. Amit Sood as you listen to this, what is the first thought that struck your mind?
Sai Ram Bishu.
Sai Ram, sir.
I'm blessed to be at the university. I'm blessed to be here. And it's actually to learn that I come here. It's in the company of people whom you gather in the studio that I get to really pick some pearls of learning. It's a joy being here. I'm really grateful to Swami for this beautiful blessing. I'm reminded of a saying by Mark Twain, who says, "It isn't what you don't know that gets you into trouble. It's what you know for sure, and that just and so." Mm-hmm. So when we firm up our thoughts to such a level that we believe it is my thought or nothing, that's when we get into trouble.
Mm.
When we start thinking of ourselves as a knower, and the knowledge that we believe is absolute, that's when we are in trouble. I'm reminded of a song, actually. Mm-hmm. If you permit me, I'll just hymn
sure.
it as we with.
Why not?
This is from really old times, and it goes something like this. Dharti kahe pukar ke, bij bichale pyar ke, mausam bita jaye, mausam bita jaye. So, translated, it means, Earth is asking you to spread the seeds of love. Mm. Do it hastily, do it quickly.
Mm.
We are running out of the season.
Mm.
And the next paragraph goes like this. Apni kahani chhod ja, kuch to nishani chhod ja, kaun kahe is or, tu fir aaye na aaye.
Oh.
Mausam bita jaye, mausam. Now, the poet might have thought of it, writing in one meaning, but there are two that come to my mind.
Yes.
One is that apni kahani chhod ja, leave behind your story, something to remind people of you, leave behind some symbols with which people can remember you. And who knows whether you'll come back here or not. That might be one thought.
Mm.
But the one that resonates with me also is leave behind the story that you carry as yourself. Apni kahani chhod ja. This is a story.
Yes.
The identity that you carry is a lie.
Yeah.
Leave behind this story. Kuch to nishani chhod ja. You're carrying so many symbols of your identity.
Yeah.
Your possessions are some. The positions that you hold are some of them. What you believe, the thoughts, the knowledge that you believe you possess, that's another. So leave behind at least some symbols. Kaun kahe is aur tu fir aaye na aaye. Believe that there is hope that you may not come back this way.
Mm.
You may not be born again.
Mm.
So walk so lightly.
Mm.
Leave behind those thoughts that you believe your own.
Mm.
And these firm knowledge or dogma that we believe are our own. And travel light and free.
Mm.
So that we don't have to come back again.
Mm. Yes. Wonderful. Travel light and free. In fact, here, the best way to reduce the luggage is to somehow give up that I-ness and minus, as you mentioned, and that's what perhaps is that ahamkara and mamakara which Bhagwan always talks about. In the previous session we discussed how that is different from aham. Aham is different from ahamkara. And one very interesting thing that Swami is saying here as he begins is, Swami is saying even many seekers and ascetics, they lose their spiritual merit once they harbor ego in them. I mean, you might be someone very accomplished, you might be someone who has achieved a lot, even spiritually, but if you have not been able to somehow let go or diminish or obliterate the ego in you, then somehow you're living, it's like a tank which is full of water, but there is a hole.
Yeah.
And so everything that you have amassed or aggregated may just get dissipated. I mean, that is the dreadful thing that can happen, actually. In fact, I remember in my school days here, when I joined, suddenly I got this thought, you know, because here you read the life of so many saints, you read the Ramayana, Mahabharata and all the scriptures, and you hear the stories of people who have done penance for hundreds of years, you know, sages, and especially I used to think that, you know, how could that demon ask for a boon that, you know, bless me with this boon that I may annihilate, you know, that other person. Because I used to feel that if someone has like done penance for hundreds of years, I mean, you'd be so cleansed, dear. How can you do penance for like so many years and still, you know, harbor anything negative? I mean, we sit in meditation for half an hour only, you feel you have become Swami Vivekananda, you feel so elevated. But how can you, like, you know, you do penance, you become a rishi actually, you have become already a rishi, like you said, Durvasa, you become a rishi but you have so much anger. How can you become a sage but still you have this weakness and that weakness, you know? So I remember I asked this once to one of the wing teachers, you know, in the hostel, and he said, that is the most critical, tricky part of spirituality. He said, spirituality is like a ladder, you know, it's like the snake and ladder game. You can fall from any height, at any time. And that is the reason why you have to be alert all the time. And so I think that fall, as I think now, can happen at any moment if you have not clogged, if you have not blocked this aspect, if you have not taken care of this ego, because only when there is ego, then there is body consciousness, and when there is body consciousness, then, you know, there is anger, and then there is desire, and any of the weaknesses can pull you down. And that's how, you know, even you hear the story of Vishwamitra also, someone who did penance for so many years, and then suddenly he fell for anger, suddenly he fell for desire. I mean, any time you can fall, and I think that's what Swami is telling here, that you have to be really careful not to harbor ego.
In fact, as Swami is talking about seekers and ascetics and also ahankara, one very beautiful scene comes to my mind from the drama of Sri Krishna Chaitanya.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we were in our 10th or 11th standard, we had this famous Sri Krishna Chaitanya drama.
Mm.
And Swami liked the drama so much that he asked for it to be played twice. Mm-hmm. Once was for the convocation and once for the doctor's conference.
Oh, in the
90s.
The institute auditorium.
Correct,
sir. Yes.
There, what happens is, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is initially a great scholar.
Hmm.
And, you know, he goes over all the other small hermitages and he conquers them with his sheer brilliance. He's brilliant and he's having all the forms of grammar on his fingertips. And he's like a master of Sanskrit, of literature, where nobody can, you know, equal him. And then once he gets bitten by the Krishna bug, if I may call it so, once he becomes entranced in the Lord's, in the Lord's love, and in the Lord's name, he loses interest in everything.
Mm.
Now, there is that beautiful scene where he's sitting there, and the disciples are trying to say, you know, this grammar, that, this thing, that thing. Mm. He says, throw all this away. he's totally disassociated himself from any of the worldly grammar, from any. Mm. Basically, he has lost himself.
Mm.
See, that ahankara, that self which he had of, I have achieved this scholarship, I have had this kind of this thing. The moment he gave himself. So what is it? When you say, I give myself to the Lord, the moment he gave himself to the Lord, he lost himself in the Lord.
Yes.
And everything that kind of defined what he was just melted away. And only that which remained was the Lord, his name, his form. And he was one with the Lord. So, you know, that scene comes to mind. It's very, very beautiful. Because he says, that many a sadhaka have, like you were rightly mentioning, after doing penance for so many years, then finally you ask for...
you want to kill this person, you want to do this.
In fact, it's very interesting. There's a slightly deeper connotation. When I just think about this, there was a very nice statement in one of the Vahinis I was reading. And Swami says, no point in doing spiritual sadhana. There are people all over the world who think that, okay, if I do this meditation, if I do this, if I do that, I have achieved. Now, spiritual sadhana looked at as a means of achieving glory to yourself is as good as worldly knowledge or anything else. It's nothing to do with spirituality, because the whole purpose of spirituality is to annihilate the self.
Yes.
So he says, but they don't succeed. Why they don't succeed? He says, because they don't have good character. Good character. And he says, very simple example. If you want a tree to grow, first the soil has to be fertile.
Yes.
He says, you may get a huge tree and plant it, but if the soil is not fertile, how do you expect it to grow and sustain? So it's a slightly, it takes me slightly further from the topic, but I just thought these few points were related. In the sense, you are talking about yoga nowadays. Yoga and meditation are the most marketed terms in spirituality. When I was in Gurgaon, when I was in Mumbai and few other places, so people ask me, kya your ashram there is no yoga and meditation? How come? What kind of an ashram is that? You don't have a yoga center, you don't have meditation. And then I ask them, what is meditation? Are you asked? That only, that close your eyes and all that. So, what's happening is, meditation has now, which is supposed to be a part of spiritual sadhana, which is meant to annihilate the self, is becoming a practice to strengthen the self.
It's a modern day fad.
It's a fad. I meditate for 5 hours. Yeah. Oh, you don't chill out in meditation for 3 hours? Oh, I do it for 5 hours and still I'm thinking all about myself. So like in one of the places Swami says, somebody asks him, Swami, how long to meditate? Yes. He says, till the time you forget that you meditated. Like the more you keep thinking, aray, 1 hour over, enough of my meditation, there's no meditation. So the whole point is, Yama, Niyama, Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, Samadhi. This is Ashtanga Yoga. That is what poor Patanjali told. Now today we conveniently forget Yama, Niyama. I can smoke, I can drink, I can do what I want. But arey, meditation is cool. Asana, I sit in one place, I do some Pranayama, and I directly expect Dhyana. Dhyana comes after Dharana, it comes after Pratyahara, that is control of senses, inward movement of senses, control in the mind, then dhyana comes. So what I'm saying is, all this becomes equivalent to knowledge. When he says seekers and scholars, they go astray, because now even spiritual knowledge, gathering books, gathering spiritual knowledge. I have seen so many TED Talks that give me a very clear perspective of life. I know all this stuff. But what are you following? Ultimately, that's what matters. And I have read all these discourses of Baba. I have read all this. You know, actually, this point, no, that person said better. That guru said this better. This person, Gita is the ultimate. All this is also knowledge.
Yeah.
But is it helping you to forget yourself? So that's the whole purpose of any spiritual.
Beautiful. I'm reminded of a philosopher who talks about this very hook that ties us. And he says, if you have an opportunity to be right or to be kind, pick to be kind.
Right.
And it's just our...
That's right.
Our greatest valuable possession, our most valuable turf, has actually become our opinion and our knowledge of what we know. And it is this knowledge which ties us down somewhere. I'm reminded, it was something very beautiful when you spoke about good character. And Swami talks about losing ourselves like a drop of ocean loses itself in the ocean. And a couple of days back, we were in the class talking about Swami talking about self-confidence as the foundation, self-satisfaction as the wall, self-sacrifice as the roof, and self-realization as the life. So in this context, we were trying to compare. And self-confidence, students came up with a beautiful comparison. And they said that it's to have the belief that I'm clean enough to merge in the ocean. To know that I carry no guilt, no shame. I have the character which is worthy of merging in the ocean. I must make myself, and I must view myself. I am always worthy. Like Swami says, we don't need to deserve and to be anywhere. But it's actually our actions or our guilt that takes us away from this, from the goal finally. And so that's the self-confidence, to know that we are worthy. And then self-satisfaction is that we are actually from the same ocean. To be aware that we are one step forward. Finally, we are from the same ocean. And then self-sacrifice is to be willing to lose oneself. Whatever I know about myself, whatever is it that I know my dogma as, my knowledge as, my wisdom, or my image of myself in my own eyes, what my possessions are, I must be willing to let go of that. Only then the ocean accepts me completely. Only then the self-realization or the merger happens.
Very beautiful. In fact, looking at this, what you're saying, a little bit more technically from the spiritual perspective. Again, this is technically from the spiritual jargon point of view. But, you know, this is when the students were saying self-confidence, it's almost like they're saying we should become transparent. Like, what is the meaning of losing ourselves? And to put it in the right perspective, in which, you know, we have dealt with this topic earlier, it's the mind. Basically, what has to become transparent? What has to be annihilated? You can't annihilate your body. I mean, you say, okay, I annihilate my body, I die. So then nothing remains. So it's the mind that has to go. And Swami says, you turn the mind to the left, you're locked. You turn the mind to the right, you're open. That is, turn towards God, you're free. Turn towards the world, you are bound. Now, what is the meaning of freeing the mind? So again, I said this is technical jargon because this is going to get a little heavy. He says three types of problems with the mind. Mala, Vikshepa, Avarna. So he says, how do you become clear? How do you annihilate yourself? Annihilating yourself is annihilating of the mind. Mala is dirt. He says when on a mirror you have dirt, lot of dust and dirt, you can't see your reflection clearly. So that mala is the dirt and dust, that all your vasanas or your this thing. So that has to be cleaned slowly by selfless action, karma. Keep doing selfless help to everybody. Help, serve, serve, serve. That is mala, that removes mala. Then he says vikshepa. Vikshepa is like movement, constant movement. If the mirror is constantly moving, unsteady, you can't see yourself, you can't see your own reflection. So he says bhakti. Bhakti or devotion and love for Lord, it helps you stabilize the mind, the movement of the mind. You know, he says it helps you stabilize. That's why he says when you're singing bhajans, if you clap your hands, it's like sitting under a tree with a lot of birds on it. So the moment you clap your hands, all the birds fly away. So he says when you clap your hands for bhajans, it's all the thousands of thoughts in your mind. They all fly away and your mind becomes steady. So vikshepa, the constant movement of your mind is stabilized. And then avarna. Avarna is, he says, okay, your mind, your mirror is stopped moving, it is very steady, it is very clean, spick and span. But imagine a big black cloth is covering it. Then you can't see yourself. He says, you have a mirror, but a thick black cloth is covering it. That is ajnana, that is ignorance. He says, that can be removed only through jnana, through the path of wisdom.
So karma, bhakti, jnana.
Karma, bhakti, jnana. So he says all three are important. You need all the three to clear your mind. So your mind is such that it easily accumulates. Now it has accumulated the idea that it is a scholar. It accumulates the idea that it has achieved something in the world. It accumulates the idea that this is what I am. Like Swami used to ask, boy, who are you? So he says, no, I am so and so. then, oh, that is your name. No, no, actually, this is what I do. That's your profession.
Mm.
No, no, I am this old, but that's your age.
Mm.
I am from so and so, but that's your place from where, but who are you?
Mm.
So, you know, yes, the mind kind of accumulates so many identities that it is so clogged and it becomes so opaque. So, how do you make it more transparent? How is it that you lose all these identities? And so he beautifully explains this, Mala Vikshepa Avarna. He says this is how you kind of annihilate the mind.
Wow.
That's
in fact, as you mentioned about who are you, I just reminded of one beautiful experience that Dr. Ravi Kumar, who is currently the warden of Vrindavan campus, once shared. I think the early days of Vrindavan there. So one day Swami comes out and these boys were actually at that point in time, they used to study in the Bangalore University and, you know, they used to stay next to Bhagwan as a resident. So one day Swami came out in the morning and these four boys were standing there on Swami's pathway, and Swami suddenly asked one boy, "Who are you?" And so this boy said, Swami, you know, he's just taken aback. So he just mentioned from where he comes from, you know, just the name, the usual answer. And Swami looked very displeased.
Hmm.
So the next person, then Swami went to the next person, "Who are you?" And he thought, you know, Swami is not happy with that answer, so maybe I should give little more details. So this person said, "Swami, my name is this, full name, and I come from this region of Madhya Pradesh, and this is the place that I come from," and all that. So Swami heard, and Swami was like, he is not impressed at all. So he went to the third boy, and, "Who are you?" Now he thought that, you know, so both the answers did not please Swami, so I should definitely, perhaps I should say something else, you know. So he said, "Swami, I'm your child, Swami." And so that boy was sort of not fully into it, you know, it was like 50-50. And so Swami was like, okay. Swami just tapped and then I moved on. And,
To the next boy.
And the previous day, Swami had given a discourse actually, where Bhagwan had mentioned about Vedanta and about how there is only one that exists and all those concepts. And so suddenly the fourth boy when he came, and so he thought, you know, this is what Swami will definitely like. So he said, "Swami, I and you are one." Swami said, "Really?" "Seriously?" Swami said, "In that case, why don't you go and give darshan?"
You know, one more story which Swami shared in the 1990 series,
yes,
summer course. So Swami said like this, so there was this Brahman who had this half knowledge, and poor man, he was very sincere, but he had this that self was still there. So Shivoham, 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 he would keep saying, "I am Shiva, I am Shiva, I am one with Shiva." So one day some of the other disciples came, "Eh, you are going on saying Shivoham, Shivoham, then what does Parvati become to you?" He said, "Oh my God, I am so Lord, forgive me, please forgive me, I am mistaken." Swami says, if he really believed Shivoham, he should say she is also Shiva.
Shiva.
Everybody is Shiva. So he says, you know, that
half knowledge
becomes,
or basically knowledge without experience, without internalizing.
So that's what he says.
Yes.
It's like it's like the wall without the foundation.
But there Swami added that if you really believed in that, if you really believed that I and you are one, and if you had gone into the darshan grounds with convinced of that feeling,
correct,
then people would have seen not you, but they would have seen me.
Exactly.
They would have seen me.
Exactly. Correct. In fact, another very beautiful story which Swami says, you know, it was in our Kode batch.
Yes.
99. Swami was mentioning about Swami Shivananda.
Yes.
You remember that story?
Yeah.
So Swami went to the Shivananda ashram in the mid-50s or late 50s. And as Swami was entering the ashram, so there was a whole procession of his disciples. They came with the Purna Kumbham. Then the whole place was beautifully decorated, flowers, lamps, everything. And they came and invited Swami. But Swami Shivananda had not come. And then Swami went inside. Swami was fine. And he asked Swami, "Do you know why I did not come to invite you?" bring you in. Swami said, "Aunt, tell me why." "Because you and I are one."
How beautiful.
He said, "You and I are one." Then Swami smiled. He says, "That is the truth. That is very good. If you really believed in that, then why did you do this decoration?"
Yeah.
See,
yeah.
The understanding of the ultimate truth has to reflect in the smallest of your actions.
Yes.
Very true.
In your daily actions.
In everything.
In everything. Yes. In your conviction. And see, that is the beauty with Swami when you look at his life. This is one story which I can never get tired of telling, and I can go on and on telling about it in every session of our discussion. With what was his approach towards the life that he led?
Yes.
Like, Swami was very tired one of those days. Like, he was distributing something throughout the morning. And so afternoon they thought he will take time. Then he came out sharp at 3. He said, "I have to go for darshan." Then some of the people who were around, they said, "Swami, you can take some rest." He said, no, devotees have come. I need to go for darshan." Then they said, "Swami, they will wait. I mean, you are so tired this morning." Swami said, "See, you have not understood anything about me." He said, "Swami, what is it?" Swami said, "They are not coming for my darshan. I am going for their darshan. Devotees don't come for my darshan. I am going for their darshan. Why? Because I see myself in them.
Yes.
I am going to see myself. I am going to speak to myself. I am going to take letter from myself. I am going to... I am always in bliss. So this is, this is the experience of many people who get an interview with Swami. Like, once a family goes in and they come out,
yes,
they can write on a block of gold that this avatar has come only for my family.
Yeah.
Because, he identifies so much with them,
yes,
and he becomes so much a part of their family.
Yes.
The next day when he doesn't look at you, then you realize, he has come for others also.
Yeah. But this experience of oneness remains extremely intellectual for me, brothers.
Mm.
So how does one get from just an intellectual experience of this and getting it right as far as words are concerned to actually experiencing it, like you say, experiencing the oneness and truly be able to walk as Swami, talk as Swami, and experience yourself as Swami, not just thinking of the fact that Swami has said that. So intellectually it is of course taken and true.
Yeah.
The challenge is how do I go?
No, it is like, in my simple understanding, there's just a two-step process. First is to know that is the ultimate truth.
Yeah.
First of all, gyatum. You know it.
Yeah.
Having known that this is what the thing is, then what you can do is, now that you know this is the truth and that there is a spark of divinity in everybody, the first step is try to offer every action of yours to God. Now, somebody is behaving very nasty with you. It's very difficult to think that this person is also God. And this person. So then you'll have to start thinking and praying to the Lord and telling Him that whatever happens to me in my life is good for me. That surrender has to come. So when you have that surrender and offer all your actions to God, then slowly you start seeing that person is also God, this person is also God. Then reflection, reaction, discern, what Swami says. I think that reaches a level where this is the question which John Hislop asked Swami in the conversation. He asked, "Swami, everybody is divine, everybody is God, so how should I treat everybody equally?" Swami said, "Will you treat your servant maid and your wife equally? You cannot. Then how do I live Advaita?" He says, "Bhava Advaita, not Bahya Advaita."
Bhava must be.
Bhava. Oh. In your feeling,
spirit.
In the spirit, you have to feel one with the whole creation.
Yeah.
When you go on the road, you should not see somebody suffering. You should feel the pain of that person suffering. So that is the Bhava Advaita. And then he says, in that, till you reach a state, you have to think the same divine energy is in your wife and the same energy is in your servant maid.
Yes.
But as far as the world is concerned, you will treat your wife as your wife, you will treat your servant maid as your servant maid.
Yes.
So,
but because you know that there is a divine, you will not do anything that will hurt it. Or
exactly.
So you will treat, you play your role, but you do your role perfectly well.
Exactly.
So that next time you are given better roles, as Swami says.
And then Swami adds a very beautiful point. He says, ahimsa is not harming others,
yeah.
It is not harming oneself as well.
Yes.
So now the moment you think God is there in everybody, but I am the greatest sinner, Papoham, Papakarma, Papam. That's why Swami changed it to Praptoham.
Yes.
I am not a sinner. I have merit.
Yes.
You have a lot of merit.
Yes.
You are the blessed one. True. He says, no, Papoham, Papakarma, you are not a sinner. You are God. You are divine. You have that power in you. So he says, be compassionate to yourself also.
Must in fact begin with oneself.
Yeah.
In fact, as someone said that, you know, if for example a prince is sleeping and he's dreaming. Mm-hmm. And in the dream, he sees that he has become a beggar.
Mm-hmm.
And he's begging there, he's begging for water, and you know, and then in that, he's gasping for breath and he's thirsty and he wakes up and he shouts, give me water, you know. And so when people go near him, they don't say, oh beggar, get up, you know. You will address him as, ha, prince, here's the water. You won't say, oh beggar, here's the water.
Absolutely.
So that is what you truly are. Is what Swami is telling. You know, you identify yourself as a beggar, but you're in a dream. You are actually the prince. And Swami, that's why he treated everyone as like a prince. Because that's what we are.
True. I'm reminded this, Nisargadatta had a beautiful quote. In fact, this morning, I was listening to a talk by Brother Sonam, who spoke in US, and he spoke about Swami talking about nothing being everything.
Yes.
And he spoke about experiencing oneself in isolation, in solitude, as nothing.
Mm.
And Brother Sonam brought it up from Swami saying, when he talks about himself as man among men and a woman among women and a child among children, and alone I am God.
Mm.
And there he was talking about being in isolation, experiencing oneself as nothing. And Nisargadatta has a beautiful saying where he says, wisdom is knowing I'm nothing. And love is knowing I'm
everything.
I'm everything.
Yeah, beautiful.
And my life goes
between these two. Very beautiful.
Beautiful.
Yes.
Nothing and everything.
Yes.
So it's basically love.
Wisdom and love. Wisdom is knowing that I'm nothing. Love is knowing that I'm everything.
Yes.
In fact, there is another beautiful idea from Nisargadatta Maharaj. He says, you know, there is one, I am that is like a question and answer. It's a book where somebody is asking the question. So this person asks, okay, all this is fine, you know, but what happens to my job? What happens to my family? What happens to me? My profession? All that ahankara, that ego, what we are talking about. He says, look here. We are talking of the whole house is ablaze with fire. You are asking what happened to my matchstick. He says, the whole house is ablaze.
Yeah.
Yes. And you are worried about a small matchstick. So I am talking of that level where you have gone beyond name, form, language, perception, even a vibration. You are in that state where you are before creation happened. You are that. And you are that state of nothingness with infinite potential.
Yes.
Now I am speaking of you as in that state, and then you are talking about your job and your family. So the analogy he gives is very beautiful. He says the whole house is ablaze and you are worried about a matchstick.
In fact, you know, Amit sir, you were mentioning that, you know, how do you really make it into a practical experience from an intellectual understanding of this oneness, is of what Sai Prakash shared about acceptance and gratitude. I think that is definitely one very beautiful practical way, I think, which Swami has referred to in so many discourses. Just before starting this satsang, I just was looking up to one more discourse, and there Swami says that, you know, we do satsanga, we do these spiritual discussions, and Swami says, what is satsang? And satsang, Swami says, is not spending time with people, so-called spiritual discussions, and, you know, people, so-called good company.
Mm-hmm.
Many times we associate satsang with good company. Swami says satsang means you are in Satchidananda. That is what is satsang. So where you experience the truth, with the truth that is Sat, Chit is awareness, and when there is coming together of truth and awareness, basically sugar and syrup, Swami says, then you experience Ananda. That is Satsanga. That Satchidananda, that Ananda is what is Satsanga. And Swami says, so that is the godly feeling. Satchidananda is Swami. So how do you become God? Swami says, you become God first by cultivating godly feelings. So once you cultivate godly feelings, then slowly you can become God. The classic example that Swami always gives of in the Ramayana, how Bharata, thinking about Rama, became someone whom anyone who saw Bharata, they felt that they were seeing Rama. I think it's the same with all the godly persons. You know, when you see a godly person, you experience such godly vibrations. When they speak, you feel God is speaking to you. You feel, when you interact with them, you feel maybe God is communicating something. In fact, there is a very beautiful incident from the life of Saint Tukaram. They say that once, as Tukaram was giving darshan, and this lady comes and she does pranam, and Tukaram blesses Dirgha Sumangali Bhava.
Mm-hmm.
And this lady gets up and says, how do you make a mockery of me like this? You know, I thought you are a great saint.
Mm.
I thought you are the all-knowing one. Everybody told you go to him, he will give you solace. I have just become a widow and you are giving me this blessing. And Tukaram was very shocked. He said, then how did this come? If this was not true, it would have never come out of my mouth.
Mm.
So he also didn't know. He said, no, it cannot be. If it has come, then maybe there is something. He said, no, you are a fraud. You are telling everyone that you are blessing everyone, but you have no clue what is happening. Tukaram says, even I have no clue what is happening, because, but this much I can tell you, that if this is not true, it wouldn't have come out of my mouth.
Mm.
And in that moment of absolute confusion, a revelation happens. Then suddenly someone comes running and says that this person's husband, who was lying down, from the grave he has got up.
My God.
and he says, that person has just, everyone is stunned how that person got. It is like when you are so much God steeped, as Swami says, what I speak is not truth. It is whatever I speak is truth.
That's right.
It's not that I speak the truth. Whatever I speak
becomes the truth.
That is the truth. It is like, it is not whatever I do is dharma. Whatever I not that I do dharma. Mm. Whatever I do is dharma.
Is dharma.
I think that is the stage. That is the stage of oneness you actually reach.
Very true. And this a similar incident with Swami also, no? On Sundar Iyer, where he was bitten here in the university by a snake, and Swami refused to say that it was a snake bite. He said it was a thorn. Mm. You are lying that it was a snake. And Sundar kept saying that it was actually a snake, and to everybody that, and now everybody started asking him that you've been lying, it was not a snake. And so many students saw it, and and after many, many years, Swami clarified to him that I, from my mouth, will never say that it was a snake. Mm. It was a thorn, it was a thorn, it was a thorn. And then it dawned on him that by saying that it was a thorn, Swami converted that snake bite into thorn. Just like you said, no?
Yeah.
What he says becomes the truth.
Yeah.
In fact, the last line of the paragraph that we just read, he says to practice them in life. He says the principles present in scriptures, Vedas and Upanishads need to be practiced in life. Without putting them into action, any amount of scholarship and speeches are of no avail. Mm. So we have been only speaking.
I know.
Any amount of scholarship and speeches are of no avail.
Yes.
To practice them in life, one needs to shed the ego feeling, I know, and reflect on the real essence contained in the Vedas, Upanishads and the scriptures. See, this is so beautiful. There is that one very nice story which Swami says. So he says that there is this young Brahmin, very radiant, and he's set up a ashram, on the other side of the river, and then he is doing his regular puja morning, and he gives upadesh to people. He speaks to them about God, the power of God's name, and this and that. And so this is going on, and he becomes very popular in the village and all that. But what happens is the milk lady, she has to cross the river and get the milk. So she is on the other side of the bank. Mm. Now all this is going on, and then one day she comes very late. And he says, lady, you have no sense of time. You have no idea. I have to get ready. I have to do my puja with that milk. I have to do abhishekam. Then I have to get ready, and people are waiting. My devotees are going to wait, and I have to speak to all of them. And because of you, now the whole routine has got derailed. Mm. Then she says, see, I'm a poor lady. The river is in spate. I can't help it. The river boatman said he won't bring me. He says, haven't you heard any of my talks? Chant the Lord's name. You will not have any problem. So she says, why didn't you tell me before? So then from ever since, there is no delay. And she's coming on time. And he says, then one of those is, it's raining heavier than any other day in my life. And how did this milk lady make it? So he asks her.
Yes.
Then she said, Swamiji, you only told, chant the Lord's name. One name I knew. I'm chanting and I'm crossing. Nothing is happening to me. He says, no, you are lying. It can't be true. So she says, come. She chants the name and happily crosses the river and goes. And this man thought, if my words themselves have so much power, then how much power I must be having? Maybe I can cross the river even without chanting the name. So, I think he possibly tried putting one leg. He said, no, for backup safety, let me actually chant the Lord's name. And he tried chanting the Lord's name, and toughly fell inside.
I think that is the dooming. That Swami says, when you have ego,
right,
and you have no genuine experience, that is how you get drowned. You.
Right. He says, yeah, after all, I mean, it is I who told that lady, and if I can myself not float on water.
Yes.
So I think that story summarizes the entire paragraph. So
in fact, as you're talking about this experience, I've read this somewhere that, you know, during the final days of Sri Ramakrishna Paramahansa, and when Swami Vivekananda is asked to, you know, preach, where Swami Vivekananda says that, I don't want to preach because only that person has the right to preach who can confer that experience. Not only experience, have the experience of that experience, but also be in a position to confer that experience. Unless I have that ability, I don't want to preach. And in fact, only when Ramakrishna Paramahansa blesses him with that gift, only then he takes up to direct disciples and preach. I think only when you have experienced also, at least to some extent, only then the words also acquire some power, the words also acquire some amount of conviction, only then the words actually
you're speaking
touch.
From that level of awareness, in fact, yes. Since you brought up Nisargadatta Maharaj,
yes.
You know, a very nice point he says, somebody is asking him, like, how do we get that experience? How do we reach that state? How do we, you know, achieve that? He says, how easily you make it a commodity. Now you have made realization a commodity. And thousands of people are making money out of it.
Yes.
I can sell you realization. He's saying, how easily you have made this into a commodity.
Yes.
It is not something which you achieve. It is something which you give up.
Yes.
You are realized now.
Yes.
You are God. You are realized right now. Mm. It is not acquiring realization. It is giving up everything that confuses you as not realized. Everything that puts you in a state of ignorance, that says you are not God,
yes.
That says you are not realized, that is the self that has to be removed. That ego, that ahankara, that has to be removed. He says, the moment you remove that ahankara, remove all this, there you are realized, you are God. So you're saying, are if I get up at 3 o'clock every morning, will I get realized? Are I have been doing meditation for so many decades, Nothing seems to be happening to me. Not even 3 inches of aura is coming behind my head. I mean, so Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, that's what he told, that there was a sadhaka who came. And he said, "Arey, I have done 10 years penance. Just by looking at one blade of grass, I can set it on fire." Then Ramakrishna Paramahamsa said, "If I were smarter, I would have bought a matchstick."
Yeah.
So, you know, you need not do 10 years you have wasted of your life getting a siddhi that will set something on fire.
Yes.
So, the whole purpose is not to achieve something. The whole purpose is to remove what you are not.
Yes.
Because you are realized, you are God, you are what you are finally, here and now.
Yes. Yeah.
And so, you know, everything that makes, so that ego, that ahankara which Swami is talking about, is actually that ignorance.
Yes.
That ignorance which makes you think that you are not complete, that makes you think that you are limited, that makes you think that you are dependent, you are limited, you are, you know, you are not complete.
Yes.
This kind of Purnamada Purnamidam. So you are complete, you are infinite, you are limitless.
Yes.
But anything that makes you think that you are limited is that ahankara which has to be removed. Yes. It's that body, it's the senses, it's the mind, it's that ahankara. Mm. So that state of ahankara which is the subtlest amongst all this, even that has to go.
Yes.
Then you remain what you are.
In fact, as you're mentioning this, you know, in our normal conversations many times, you know, I've mentioned this before, but I think this is something that we need to reiterate. If someone loses his cool, you know, then you say, yeah, I'm only human, you know, so that's okay. You know, I get angry, yeah, I'm human. Yeah, I feel like buying this, you know, I'm a bit greedy. Yeah, that doesn't matter, I'm human. You know, we have made it like, it's absolutely normal for us to actually get angry, actually have little desire, actually indulge in something. We under the sort of garb and convenient sort of
excuse
that we are human. And that's what Swami is constantly, you not human. First of all, Swami should say, I remember in our school days, Swami should say, every day you should say that I am not animal, I am man. I am not animal. Whenever you get any bad thoughts, Swami say, you should tell, I am not pig, I am not dog, go from one room to another, keep roaming. I am not cat, I am not this, I am not snake, I am man. And then Swami say, after that, I am not man, I am divine. I think today, just by using this expression, I am human, we that's a convenient excuse for us to do anything.
That that's why Swami said human values.
Human.
He didn't say divine values. Said satya, dharma, shanti, prema, ahimsa are human values.
Yes.
I mean, even to call yourself human, you need to have these values.
We have all sort of, which are subhuman values. We do subhuman things.
Level of the human, no? Mm. At the level of the divine, I think it's absolute.
See, it's like the adulteration of the milk which you get in the morning from the village lady. Now, 20 years back, maybe people didn't add water in the milk.
Yeah.
So it was pure milk.
Yeah.
Now, even today it is called milk. But how much of it is milk, how much of it is water?
Yes.
So, even today we call ourselves human. But how much of us is human? How much of us is animal?
Yes.
So I think that's
I think that is the reason why when you reflect every discourse that Bhagwan started, he always addressed as Divyatma Swaruplara.
It was Prema Swaruplara.
Prema Swaruplara and Divyatma Swaruplara. It was never, ladies and gentlemen, it was never devotees.
Yeah, if one was to find the parallel from Nisarudatta, it's everything and nothing. So like he says, wisdom is nothing and love is everything.
Is everything.
Yes.
That's it.
Yeah. So I think the one way of understanding, I think one take home from whatever we are discussing today is, I think whatever we do, if the doership is there, I think that is where it's coming from, a space of ego. We have to let go of that feeling.
Right.
In fact, today I was talking to one of the former students of Bhagwan's University. Now he's working in Kuwait, and in fact he's the president of the Satyasaya organization in Kuwait. And I asked him, so what is your guiding principle as you're now leading the organization there? He said a very beautiful thing. He said, nothing. I only have to ensure that I move away. I get away. I get away from everything that is coming the way of the devotees connect with Swami. So the only thing I have to do is I just have to get away. Then everything will be fine.
Bishu, if you permit me, there is I'm reminded that in the practice of coaching, the corporate coaching, the modern art or modern science of coaching as it has developed, the work that happens is with the client, the coach attempts to be non-judgmental. And in the inquiry happens from a belief that the client knows all there is to know. So he's magnificent and complete. Now we are talking about management.
Yeah.
Talking to a client from the understanding that he's divine.
Mm.
You know, magnificent and complete.
Complete.
And so what the coach does is talks to the client from an understanding that he's absolutely aware.
Mm.
And he himself judges none of what is presented as ideas by the clients.
Mm.
And the experience that happens in a coaching is actually where the coach experiences himself as being absent.
Mm.
So he is trying not to be present there. He's trying purely in the inquiry and inquisitive mind on what would you do in the circumstances? What steps would you take?
Mm.
And so the experience of the coach at the level of spirituality would be
not
being there
as an
ego is concerned.
Mm.
That's the highest level of coaching. If one was to perfect it to the level of its highest potential, one would actually experience it as not being opinionated, not having any opinion. And I think that is the essence of Prema Vahini, this chapter, that it's about experiencing the awareness that the Vedic knowledge, the scriptural knowledge brings, and not to experience them as pure texts.
Yes.
Yeah?
In fact, in the early days, when Bhagwan started this whole process of darshan, and people used to gather in the Patha Mandiram, in the old Mandir. So in those days, Swami himself used to sing bhajan, Swami himself used to serve prasadam, he himself will break the coconut, he himself will do the arati to the shrine. And they say that one thing that Swami used to keep muttering to himself, in fact during the construction of the Patha Mandiram, he himself used to stand on the ladder and do the construction work along with the workers, because there was he was doing everything. And this is the sort of mantra that Swami used to always sort of keep chanting. You can't say chanting, but he should keep saying this again and again, that serve all, be nothing, do all, hear all, say nothing, bear all, be nothing, serve all, and be nothing. These four, five very, very powerful dictums, actually, where Swami says, hear all, say nothing, serve all, be nothing. I think that is the, in that nothing only there is everything. That is that essence, that everything is that pure love. Wonderful. I think we are running out of time. So there is, in fact, there is so much more to discuss, and I think that is true with everything, every one sentence of Prema Vahini. But dear listeners, we just hope that there was something for you to take away and practice in your own lives, to internalize and see how we can experience this. Please do share with us your experiences, your experiments, and if you have any queries or comments as you begin this process, or if there's anything that you want to ask for further understanding of this, I know it would have opened up many things, because there are so many things that are discussed, and definitely all of these things need a lot of clarity. So please feel free to write to us. As always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. Please pray to Bhagwan, open Prema Vahini, and just read it again and again with prayers, because I think the Prema Vahini that Swami has for each one of us is different. Let Swami speak to you through the Prema Vahini exactly what is needed for you in your spiritual growth. That will be the best message, that will be the right message coming from the source. And only when we submit ourselves at His feet and say, like Arjuna, Karishe Vachanam Dava, we will do whatever you say, Swami. We are yours completely, wholly. Then He will take over the reins of our life. He is the Sanatana Sarathi. So please, let us begin this journey with that intensity and earnestness, and let us help each other in this beautiful adventure, in this beautiful romance of becoming one with Him. Thank you so much. With prayers to Bhagwan and gratitude at His feet, and with thanks to Mr. Amit Sood for being with us, we bring to an end this episode of Vahini Satsang. We will continue the next segment, 9.5, in the coming episode of Vahini Satsang. Thank you so much for being with us all through the day. And as we bring down the curtains on this day-long Thursday life, our gratitude to each one of you for being with us, for writing to us, and for being there as a partner in this beautiful journey from I to we to He. Thank you so much. Sai Ram.